Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome one and all to the podcast that features old-time radio that you can hear all the time on the Radio Theater Channel. You might want to check that out, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. Three programs today for you to listen to, and we're going to start off with I Love Adventure. This is from 1948, and it's The Girl in the Street.
The American Broadcasting Company presents I Love Adventure. Incident number 9, The Girl in the Street, a new Carl E. Morse production featuring Jack, Doc, and Reggie.
Just to keep the record straight, I'm Jack Packard. And the red-headed Texan seated there with his feet on the desk is Doc Long. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the A1 Detective Agency, just off Hollywood Boulevard and one flight up. Reggie York is down at the federal building getting some information on a recent smuggling activity on the Mexican border. And Mary Kay Jones, the cutest secretary in Hollywood, is with him to take down the data. That leaves Doc Long and me in the office.
I don't get it, Jack. Why you have to go sending Reggie out on cases which involves having to take along Mary Kay?
You said you didn't want that smuggling case.
Well, if I'd known it involved taking Mary Kay out for the afternoon...
Are you interested in work or in women?
Women? That's a silly question.
Yeah, I should have known better.
Ain't nothing I'm more interested in than women, and ain't never going to be nothing I'm more interested in than women. And I just wish there was more little old female women in the world for me to be interested in.
You're wasting your time in a detective office.
Oh, I am?
If you're so all-fired interested in women...
Ain't you forgetting Mary Kay Jones?
Yeah.
Mary Kay Jones. Cutest little secretary that ever crossed her knees to hold up her dictation book. Remember her, son?
Yeah. Just your size, huh?
Jack, that gal has got just about everything a man could ever hope to expect out of life. And all tied up in one bundle as neat and as trim as 40 cents. I think it's...
It was at that moment that Fred Locke entered the A1 office and started the wheels going on one of the most insane cases I ever had. It involved Mrs. John Fraser from the very beginning. Mrs. John Fraser, better known as Satin. That she wasn't killed at once is... But there was Fred Locke just entering the A1's office, and this is where it began.
I want to talk to Jack Packard.
That's me.
Privately.
This is Doc Long, one of my partners.
Alone. Private. You mind?
Well, yeah, Fort, we mind a lot.
Look, you two, take a gander at this paper. Here, feast your eyes on it.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Well, that's it.
Excuse me for being alive. Go ahead, you two. Talk just as darn private as you want to.
Come on. Go ahead. All right, so you're a federal man. What's the pitch?
The government wants a case broken fast. It's developing right here in Los Angeles, and we've got to put a man at the head who's completely unidentified with government work.
And I'm it, huh?
Yep. You won't appear in the case much, not on the surface. But you'll be working like a two-tailed cyclone behind the scenes.
Are you in it?
I'm in it. Up to my ears.
Who else?
Satin Fraser, for one.
Who?
Satin Fraser. Mrs. John Fraser. If she comes out of this alive, she'll be the luckiest young woman ever to breathe air.
Here I am, Satin Fraser. Mrs. Johnny Fraser, standing in the evening fog on the street corner at Muir Field in Rossmore. A June evening with the sea fog hanging among the newly leafed out trees like gray smoke, and circling around the dim street lamps like moist, glistening halos. I was all alone on the corner, just standing there, so that the headlights of the occasional traffic spotlighted me with sudden brilliance. Just now, two 15 or 16-year-old bobby socks joined me on the corner. Their white shoes and socks looked cheap and dingy under the streetlight, and their bare ankles glistened. Their white peekaboo waist gives them a naughty girl and glad of it feeling. And here comes a car.
Hi, Mouse Mink. Going our way?
Maybe. Which way you going?
You hear that, Jim? She wants to know which way we're going. Come on, climb in.
Okay. Come on, Julia. We'll open the door, stupid.
Here, you two girls, don't do that.
Why?
Do you know these boys?
What business is it of yours?
Sure, Grandma. What a big nose you got.
Well, come on, open the door.
Door don't work. Come on, Julia. I'll pull you up over. Up you go. Hey, you got a lot of girl under that kimono. All right, sweetheart, you're next.
Hey, go easy. I'm the only daughter my mother's got.
Up you come. Nothing to you but a handful of feathers. Give her the gun, Jim.
So I just stood there and watched the beginning of another sordid little tragedy of the city streets. Foolish, ignorant, tawdry little butterflies. Don't think I'm a moralist. I'm not. But as I stood there in the lights and shadows of the changing traffic, with the wet fog making my face cool and forming little beads of moisture on my eyelashes, I couldn't help thinking of my own love that glowed so warm and bright inside. In contrast, it so terribly with the ugly little scene I just witnessed. Uh-oh. Here's a man in uniform.
I beg your pardon.
Well?
I'm pie-eyed.
You don't need to apologize to me.
You busy this evening?
Yes.
No, that's too bad. Hey, you don't need to back up from me. I've been eating a lot of breath sweetener.
I just don't want you to fall on me.
Hey, you mind if I lean up against this electric light pole?
No.
Mind if I unbutton my blouse?
It's your blouse.
I guess I'm awfully spiffly, Kate.
I guess you are.
Mind if I go over and lay down on that lawn over there?
Not at all. I'm sure the owners are patriotic citizens and would love to have a uniform sleep on their lawn.
Well, what's the use of being sarcastic? The world's full of sarcastic people. Well, what's the use of it?
Poor kid. Probably a lonesome, unhappy boy in a strange town at loose ends. On the other hand, sometimes if you give a lonesome boy a little leeway, you don't get gratitude. All you get is trouble. I was wondering just how long I was going to have to stand here at Muirfield and Rossmore waiting when it happened.
Well, well, if it isn't our little friend Saturn.
Hello, Saturn.
Here, wait a minute.
Take her other arm, Ernst. Of course you're coming with us.
Let go of my arm. What are you two trying to do?
Hang on to her neck.
You don't need to be ashamed of us, Saturn. We put on our dinner jackets just especially for you.
Maybe she wanted white tie and tails.
Where are you taking me? Who are you?
Saturn, how can you? And after all these years...
I never saw you before in my life. Don't you know this is kidnapping? Don't you know they execute people? You two men must be insane.
All right, here's the car. Slide in the front seat between us. Ernst, you drive. I want to sit with my arm around Saturn.
No, I don't want to.
Please?
You're breaking my arm. Oh, don't. I'll get in.
That's the girl. She smells nice. Ernst, why do you suppose it is that a beautiful girl always smells so much more exciting when she's in an evening gown?
Because she is more exciting.
My brother, you're so prosaic. I've always had a sneaking suspicion that before she put on her gown, she slips into some mysterious, fragrant, invisible garment that gives her special perfume.
Who are you two? How do you know my name?
Satin Fraser? Why, we've known Satin Fraser since she was a little girl, with skinned knees and a missing tooth right in front, and pigtails down to her waist and freckles on her nose when it wasn't sunburned.
Who are you? Who are you? Either you must be crazy or I am.
That's Ernst Gorman at the wheel?
Don't let her fool you, Nick. She knows us all right.
I never heard of Ernst Gorman in my life. Who are you?
I'm his brother, Nick.
Ernst Nick Gorman. I'll remember that.
You hear that, Ernst? She's really going to carry it off, pretending not to know us.
She knows us all right.
You're trying to drive me crazy. That's what you're trying to do. You're kidnapping me and pretending something that's not so. You're trying to make me believe something I know isn't so.
Maybe you're deliberately trying to drive me crazy.
Now, why doesn't she want to know us, Ernst? We're really quite presentable. Remember how we were sought after in Buenos Aires last spring? And the girls in Mexico City were mad about us.
What's the reason? There's got to be a reason. Why did two strange men kidnap a girl and try to drive her crazy?
I don't think she's listening to us.
She will, when we get her there.
Hurting my arm.
I'm afraid we can't trust you, Satin. Did you notice her trying to communicate with a clerk as we came through the lobby?
Yeah, I've got the key.
I'll kill you if you don't stop hurting me. Let go of my wrist.
Right down the hall here. And that wicked, wicked attempt to attract the attention of the elevator operator.
Utterly vicious. You torture animals and love it.
Watch it, Nick. You don't make her yell before we get in the apartment.
Oh, she won't yell, will you, Satin? Get the door open. Women and children first. That's it. Now you can have your wrist all to yourself.
If you haven't torn the ligaments loose.
The same little crybaby as always, huh, Satin?
Look around. Look at the apartment. Now do you know where you are?
And who Ernst and Nick Gorman are?
Of course. It's my own apartment. How did you get a key to it?
Ernst, tell her. How did you get a key to Satin's apartment?
Although she didn't know.
I don't like the way you said that.
Oh, come on, Satin. You're not going to tell me I wasn't here in this apartment last evening.
You were not.
Then where did I get this key?
I don't know.
Don't you have a convenient memory?
No.
I'm very broad-minded. You don't need to cover up with me. If you gave Ernst a key to your apartment...
What are you people trying to do to me? What is this horrible business?
Do you deny that you flew into San Francisco from Tokyo last Friday?
No.
That you left a husband in the military diplomatic service behind in Tokyo?
No.
That you came to Los Angeles on the lark on Sunday and reopened this apartment here in Beverly Hills Monday?
Yes, I did that.
Give us the letter.
Letter?
The letter your husband sent home with you. The letter we are supposed to have.
Letter?
Yes, the letter. It's our letter. Your husband meant for us to have it.
No, no.
What's the idea of pretending you don't know us? Who are you saving the letter for? Who's got a better eye to it than we have?
You're all mixed up. There isn't any letter. Oh, no, my wrist. Oh.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Well, go find out. Invite him in.
You want me?
Of course. Your friends are our friends.
Well, all right. Oh.
Well, so you are home. I heard you were back and had opened your apartment. Hey, you don't remember me, do you? I'm Fred Locke, who had the apartment just under you.
Oh. Oh, yes, Mr. Locke. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Oh, you have company. I didn't mean
quite
to...
Quite all right. The more the merrier. We were just welcoming Satin back to the United States. I'm Nick Gorman. This is my brother, Ernst.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Mr. Locke. He has the apartment under us. My husband and I knew him quite well before we went to Tokyo.
Yeah, yes. That's been, let's see, almost 2 years ago. You know, I came up here on a goodwill mission. Knowing you were just back and alone, I had intended asking you to have dinner with me.
Oh, yes, thank you. I mean, how thoughtful.
Satin. And after Ernst and I...
Don't let me interfere with...
Well, it's perfectly all right. Ernst and Nick just dropped in for a cocktail.
Well, then, if you gentlemen will excuse us while...
Oh, no! Please! Oh.
Well... Mr. Locke's carrying a gun.
So put him up in the chair while I lash his arms and legs.
What are you doing with him?
There you are.
Well, what are you doing with Mr. Locke? Mr. Locke? Mr. Locke, are you hurt?
That's the $64 question. Put a gag in his mouth before I can tell her.
He's coming out of it. He knows what's happened to him.
Well, let him mumble in his handkerchief. Tie it tight.
You criminals. You maniacal criminals.
That'll do it.
Now then, Satin, darling, I'm sure you don't want to see an innocent man murdered.
What's that in your hand?
Fancy that, Ernst. Satin never saw a gun equipped with a silencer.
Silencer?
When the gun goes off, it sounds like the pop of a champagne cork.
You couldn't kill him. Not with his hands tied behind him. Not with a gag in his mouth and his feet tied to the legs of his chair.
Are your knees wobbling? Here, you'd better sit down. Fix our cocktail, Ernst.
I could do it one myself.
Please, what's Mr. Locke to you?
Not a blessed thing. But unless you give us that letter, we're going to have to kill him to prove to you we mean business.
No, you wouldn't.
Come on, Satin. Be a good girl. Give us our letter.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know you. I don't know anything about any letter.
Easy. Easy. Well, that's it, Ernst. Give her the cocktail.
Drink this.
No.
Drink it.
There. Now, you feel better.
What was in that cocktail?
You've got one more chance to save Locke here. One more chance. Where's the letter?
There isn't any letter. There isn't.
At the sound of the first champagne cork, Mr. Locke will have a hole in his stomach.
There is no letter.
At the sound of a second cork, Mr. Locke will be dead.
What did you put in my drink?
The letter. The letter.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Poor Mr. Locke. Poor Satin.
She's out.
Get the ropes off Locke. Leave him sitting in the chair. I'll take care of the girl while she's unconscious.
I knew from the moment I began dreaming that it was all a dream. And if only I could wake up, everything would be all right. I was back in Tokyo saying goodbye to my love, to Johnny, to Captain John Fraser of the Occupational and Reconstruction Force. Johnny was sending me back to the United States in my dream, just as he actually did only a week ago. Here we are out at the Royal National Airport outside of Tokyo. There's the same giant DC-6 that brought me so swiftly, so gloriously back across the Pacific. And there's Captain Johnny holding me in his arms. Oh, Johnny. Oh, Johnny. It's only a dream. I know you're still in Tokyo, and I'm back in Beverly Hills, California. But before I wake up, before I stop dreaming, tell me about the letter. You didn't give me a letter, did you? There isn't any letter, is there? Why do they keep asking me for a letter? What letter? Johnny, what letter? What letter, Johnny?
Mrs. Fraser. Mrs. Fraser, wake up.
I'm in charge of the apartments on this floor, and when I seen Mrs. Fraser's hall door standing open, naturally I looked in. When I seen the dead man...
Mrs. Fraser, wake up.
Naturally, I called the police.
Joe, take that woman out.
Now, look, I'm in charge of this floor.
Come on, sister.
And if Mrs. Fraser's got drunk and shot that man...
Joe, get her out of here. Call an ambulance. Looks like this girl's doped herself.
You
come on, come on,
my
come on.
You mean Mrs. Fraser shot the man and then tried to commit suicide?
Mrs. Fraser. Mrs. Fraser, wake up.
What is... Oh. A policeman.
Here. Give me a certain bed.
A policeman?
Yeah. Put this robe around you. Yeah. Yeah, wait till I fix a pillow behind you.
What's a policeman doing in my apartment?
Yeah. Now lean back.
What are you doing here?
Where there's a corpse, there's usually a policeman.
Corpse? Corpse? Then it wasn't a dream. They did kill Fred Locke.
They?
They shot Mr. Locke twice. They gave me poison to drink.
Your breath smells more like scotch.
That was poison, I tell you. The minute I swallowed it, the body is... Body.
If you look over the edge of the bed...
Oh, no.
How long have you had a gun with a silencer?
I haven't.
There was one in your hand when I came in.
What is it? What's happening to me?
I think you'd better tell me. Naturally, anything you say may be used against you.
But I don't know what it's all about. I only got home from Japan a few days ago.
Japan?
Yes. I was visiting my husband, Captain John Fraser. The next day after I opened my apartment here... Mr. Locke came to see me.
That's the name of the dead man?
Yes, Fred Locke.
Mm-hmm.
He's a member of the FBI.
What?
Yes, He said if I was patriotic and wanted to do a really important job for my country...
Hey, Joe! Joe!
Yeah?
Call the Federals. Get them up here quick.
Oh, something hot, huh?
Hurry it up.
Okay, go on.
All I know is Mr. Locke said if I wanted to do the Federal Bureau a good turn, I'd put on a dinner gown and evening wraps and go to the corner of Rossmore and Muirfield Road in Hancock Park and wait.
Yeah?
Honestly.
Any particular time?
Between 9 and 10 on the evening of Wednesday the 19th. That was last night.
That's a pretty funny story, lady.
I know it. I don't understand it. All I know is I did what Mr. Locke asked me, and I was picked up by two young men in dinner clothes.
Hmm. Two?
Brothers. Nick Gorman and Ernst Gorman. They were terrible. Look at my wrist. Black and blue. They laughed when they did that. Nick said a silencer made a gun sound like a champagne cork. He said with the sound of the first champagne cork, Mr. Locke will have a hole in his stomach. There he was, gagged, tied to a chair with a hole in his stomach.
Holy jumping catfish, girl.
With the sound of the second champagne cork, Mr. Locke would be dead. And he was.
What was the idea?
That they picked me up and brought me back here to my apartment. They had my key, and when we got inside, they said they'd not harm me if I'd give them the letter.
What letter?
I don't know. They said my husband in Tokyo gave me a letter to deliver. They said the letter belonged to them.
You denied there was a letter?
But there wasn't. There never was.
And then?
That's when they turned vicious. They laughed just the same. Anyway, Mr. Locke came to the door and pretended he was an old friend of my husband's. They jumped on him and tied him to a chair and said they'd kill him unless I gave up the letter.
And you stood by and let him?
But what could I do?
Well, if I had a letter, I...
There isn't any letter. There isn't. Don't you understand? There never was.
Yeah? One of the boys in the FBI. Go ahead. I'm keeping an eye on the door till the district attorney's boys get here.
Hello, Mr. Martin. I'm Jim Peters, homicide.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you, Peters.
This is Mrs. John Fraser. There's the body. Mrs. Fraser says it's what's left of Fred Locke, who told her he was a federal.
Yeah, mind if I have a look under the sheet?
No, go ahead. Anything the matter?
It must be.
Yeah?
Yeah. First place, there's nobody in the apartment named Locke. Second place, I never laid eyes on a man under this sheet before.
Well, well, Mrs. Fraser.
But he said...
Mrs. Fraser, you better climb out of bed and put on some duds.
Duds?
You don't want to go down to the station like you are, do you? You've got 5 minutes to get dressed. Don't try anything funny because every exit's guarded. You better step on it because I'm coming in 5 minutes, ready or not.
And there I was, trying to scramble into my clothes and be decent by the time the officer opened the door again. Got a belt. Lip. Oh, it's the one that shows. No time to change. Shoes. Stockings last, just in case. The white waist. Brown wool skirt. I wonder if it's cold in jail. Oh, loose button. Do they let you sew buttons on
morning,
in jail?
Morning, Satin.
You... How did you get in my bedroom?
Aren't you going to say hello to Ernst, too? He's behind you.
No.
No, don't turn around. Stand just as you are.
What are you trying to do to me? The police are right outside the door. All I have to do is scream.
All you have to do is scream, and your head will be split wide open.
You wouldn't.
Want to see my little hatchet?
What did I ever do to you, too? Look what you're doing to me. You kill a man before my eyes. You drug me and make it look like I did it.
Don't look so woebegone, Satin. All we want is the letter.
Letter!
One more screech out of you like that, and I'll do more than put my hand over your mouth.
Promise not to lift your voice?
Yes.
Take your hand away.
Don't you understand? Please believe me. There isn't any letter. There never was a letter.
Hold her hands.
No.
Yank them behind her.
Oh, you devil.
Why, you...
I hate you. I hate you.
Careful, you don't black her eye. It might not look good on the corpse of a suicide.
Suicide?
We want that letter, and we want it now. Unless we get it, Satin Fraser is going to jump out of that bedroom window over there.
jump?
Yes. It's one story down to a steep slate roof, then 9 stories to the pavement. Should be spectacular.
Now, there just aren't any men like you. There can't be.
Drop one story to the steep roof, a nice long roll down the slates, then out into space.
Stop it.
Satin Fraser. Suicide from bedroom window while police wait to take her in for questioning in murder.
No.
Where's the letter?
No. No, no.
Pick her up. I'll take her feet.
No. No, no.
Put her hand over her mouth.
So. There she wriggles like a wet fish.
I left the window open.
Head first or feet first?
Feet first. They always drop feet first.
No.
All right, now.
So,
when I see three, one, two, three.
No! No!
And then I was over the edge. Over the edge, but I wasn't falling. I was over the edge, but I wasn't falling. My belt had caught on something. I was hanging from the eaves. 9 stories up, and I was hanging by my belt. 9 stories up. 9 stories up! I don't know you.
You're in a private room in St. Mary's Hospital. You fainted while you were hanging up there, 9 stories.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It took the combined efforts of 2 fire department ladder companies to get you down. Your belt caught an iron vent pipe. You're a very lucky girl.
I don't know you.
I'm Jack Packard of the A1 Detective Agency, doing a job for the State Department. I have orders to say to you that your husband, Captain John Fraser, gave you a large bloodstone ring when you left Tokyo. I have orders to say that the stone is hollowed out and inside is a letter photographed on microfilm. Bloodstone and microfilm are the key words.
Why didn't you come sooner? Why didn't you come sooner?
Because if I'd come any sooner, we wouldn't have caught Nick and Ernst Gorman.
You caught them?
Red-handed. And the rest of the gang who were working on you.
There were others?
You didn't think those 2 policemen were real, did you?
Yes.
Fakes. They thought you might give the letter to the first man in police uniform you met.
But the FBI man who came in to identify Mr. Locke's body?
Another of the gang. So was a woman who said she was the housekeeper. It was all set up to make you think you were safe so you'd give up the letter.
I couldn't. Johnny said to guard it with my life.
Johnny's got a very brave young woman for a wife. If he ever does this to you again...
I don't know what's in the letter, but Johnny said we wouldn't want to live if its contents fell in wrong hands.
Johnny was right. I'm sorry I can't tell you more. You deserve to know.
I don't want to know. Why do they want to kill me? Killing me wouldn't get them the letter.
It might have prevented us from getting it. You see, there were 2 parts to this business. 1, the delivery of the letter safely to us. 2, the capture of the Nick and Ernst Gorman gang under circumstances that would prove they were the traitors we knew them to be. That's why Fred Locke and I used you as bait.
Then Mr. Locke was a federal man.
And died.
Yes. How did Nick and Ernst know to meet me on the corner of Rossmore and Mule?
You tipped them off.
You told them I had the letter?
You were protected as long as Locke was alive, but when they put him out so ruthlessly, we did rather leave you out on a limb.
Yes, 9 stories up.
I'm afraid so. The minute I learned Locke was dead, we moved in.
Here's the ring with the microfilm inside. It was on my finger all the time.
Thank you. We should be very proud.
I'm not. I'm just scared. I need Johnny.
It's a pleasure to tell you that if you can wait 3 hours, you can have Johnny.
But Johnny's in Tokyo.
Johnny was in Tokyo. Because of courage beyond the call of duty, certain people in Washington decided you needed Johnny more than the army of occupation.
Oh, I do, I do.
Yeah, the lucky dog.
You have just heard Isle of Adventure, a new Carlton E. Morse production featuring Michael Raffetto as Jack Packard and Barton Yarborough as Doc Long. Next week, incident number 10, entitled The Kwong Moon Dagger, an affair of Chicago's Chinatown. Betty Lou Gerson was Satin Fraser in tonight's show. Other players included Peggy Weber, Louis Van Ruten, Russell Thorson, Lou Krugman, Frank Richards, and Dix Davis. The Girl in the Street was written and produced by Carlton E. Morse. Organ music by Rex Corey, your announcer, Jim Butters. now, a listening reminder. High comedy and hilarious adventure go hand in hand on the wonderful Johnny Fletcher Show, starring Bill Goodwin. So stay tuned. The Johnny Fletcher Show follows next.
This program was transcribed. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The RTC podcast is a production of the Radio Theater Channel, and we're asking you to check that out, too. If you love old-time radio, then this is the station for you. www.oldtimeradiolisten.com, and while you're there, there's also buttons for the Radio Book Channel, which features audio podcasting and audio from books. Talking books, I guess you might say. And the RTC Music Channel, which features the music of old-time radio. Well, we're up to our second feature for today, and this one is the mysterious Mr. Iemoto, the victim from 1951.
This is Mr. Moto, Mr. Iemoto.
NBC presents the world's greatest international secret agent, Mr. Iemoto, the popular Japanese character created by Pulitzer Prize winner John P. Marquand. Ruthlessly fighting the enemies of freedom, Mr. Moto's only weapons are his mind, his courage, and his fabulous knowledge of international persons, places, and things. Tonight's story concerns the victim and stars Mr. Moto, Mr. Iemoto.
I watched Dr. Stauffenberg with fascinated, incredulous horror. He was maliciously and cold-bloodedly driving a human mind towards the abyss of complete schizophrenia. He turned from the controls of the machine and bent over the trembling, half-conscious body of Alec Gleason on the operating table. His cold, pale eyes glinted malignantly as he examined his prisoner. All this while, the machine hummed evilly.
He is stubborn and defiant, this one.
Yes, Dr. Stauffenberg.
Yet if we drive him insane, his usefulness is nothing. Alec, listen. Where are you?
I am in Stralau prison in the Soviet zone of Germany. And someday I'll get you.
Switch it on.
Yes, Doctor.
My name is Alec Gleason, and I have never been tortured or mistreated. Now, say it.
My name is Alec Gleason. And I have never been tortured or mistreated.
Assignment G-31 began exactly one full year ago. It required the greatest preparation and delicacy. Much of the story must remain shrouded in secrecy. Many of our counterintelligence operators in the Soviet zone of Germany had a hand in it. To tell too much could expose their covers and endanger their lives. It began a year ago when Janet Gleason received the now famous Gleason letter. I remember very well the night she brought it to me in my New York apartment.
Mr. Moto, it's absolutely incredible that Alec could write a letter like this.
But, Mrs. Gleason, it is his handwriting.
It's his handwriting, but he couldn't have written it voluntarily.
You think he was forced to write it?
Either that or he's gone out of his mind.
You are suggesting that...
Yes. I believe he's a prisoner somewhere in Soviet Germany. I think they're doing things to him. Dreadful, horrible things. They've done it before. Vogler, Vincenti, and now Gross.
And may I read the letter again?
Certainly.
Thank you.
I know something's wrong. I know it.
Dear Janet, at last I have come to realize the truth. The Wall Street warmongers have split Korea in two.
Can you imagine Alec writing that?
American imperialists are preparing for an atomic attack on Europe.
They've driven him crazy.
I have found a new way of life here in Soviet Germany, and I shall not return to America. I have discovered the truth, and you will never see me again, so do not try to find me, Alec.
It's like a letter a 10-year-old would write.
You received it this morning?
Yes. It was mailed from Berlin 4 days ago.
And when did Alec leave New York?
April the 2nd. He was going to Paris first, then Rome and Berlin, a month in each. He arrived in Berlin 3 weeks ago, Saturday.
To do what?
Gleason Oil had a refinery in Berlin before the war. It's all been re-equipped.
Where in Berlin?
In the British sector. Alec went over to supervise the installation of a new catalytic cracking plant.
And?
Well, Alec arrived on schedule 3 weeks ago, Saturday. And the following Wednesday, he left the plant at 6 o'clock, and they haven't seen him since.
But weren't they concerned?
No. They received a telegram from Paris, signed by Alec, saying that he'd been suddenly called back to America. Obviously, the telegram's a fake.
But I am wondering what particular motive the communists would have for taking him prisoner.
Do they need a motive? Alec is a prominent American industrialist. He's an authority on the catalytic cracking of crude petroleum. They could be after what he knows, or they could want him to come out publicly on the side of communism. Can you imagine what the daily worker would do with that letter?
It requires no imagination at all.
Mr. Moto, help me, please. Find Alec for me.
That may be difficult and expensive.
Well, we're not exactly poor, you know. I have 5,000 shares of Gleason Oil preferred stock in my own name.
It occurs to me that...
Yes?
Could you fly to Berlin with me tomorrow?
Well, of course, if it's necessary.
I have ways of arranging the flight.
Well, what time would we leave?
That depends on how quickly I can see the one man in New York who can help us.
Oh, who?
I cannot tell you his name. He is posing here in New York as a communist leader.
Oh, I see.
One thing more.
Yes.
Can you get a letter of credit to the Bank of England for 50,000 American dollars?
Well, by tomorrow? It's rather a large sum of money.
Can you?
Well, I... Yes, yes, I think so.
Good. I will contact my man here. If all goes well, sometime tomorrow evening, we will take off for Europe.
It's good to see you, Moto. I've been pretending to be a communist for so long.
Please, please, do not tell me about your work. Tell me one thing. Is Madeleine Roudier still in Berlin?
Yes.
Is she still with British counterintelligence?
Yes. She's now known as Emmy Bruner. She runs a clock shop just off the Potsdamer Platz in the American sector.
You are still her New York contact?
Yes.
How do I get to her?
You give her this watch. Call on her at exactly 3 in the afternoon and give her this watch set at 10 after 8. That's her code, 810.
3 in the afternoon. This watch set at 10 after 8. A clock shop off the Potsdamer Platz. Excuse me, but I wonder if it is possible to speak with Fräulein Brunner.
I am Fräulein Brunner.
3 o'clock.
Yes.
And my watch is stopped at 10 after 8.
Who are you?
My name is Moto. Mr. I.A. Moto.
Not the Mr. Moto.
I am sorry if my miserable reputation has preceded me.
You worked on the Resnik affair?
I did.
And what do you want?
Information. About an American citizen named Alec Gleason.
Alec Gleason?
He arrived in Berlin a little over 3 weeks ago. He has disappeared.
Behind the curtain?
It would seem so. He may have wandered in by accident or been kidnapped. He is a prominent American oil man. There are many reasons why they would want him.
You know that I am doing this sort of thing all the time.
That is why I came to you.
I get them out. And in return, I ask only that they tell the world. But very few of them talk. They're either afraid or so sick that rational thinking is impossible.
Can you help me?
The quickest way is with money.
Alec Gleason's wife is with me in Berlin. She is a wealthy woman.
You understand, I take nothing myself. I have to pay certain people.
How much?
If he is in the Soviet sector, and if I can find him... His release can be obtained for 100,000 marks.
That can be arranged.
Give me a week. Find Mrs. Gleason the oldest clothes you can. I will make some inquiries. Bring her here a week from tonight. So you are Mrs. Gleason.
Yes, yes, I am.
Your hands are so smooth. I hope that once more before I die, I can be a woman again. Fräulein, I can't tell you how much I appreciate what you're doing.
We are both very grateful, Fräulein.
Thank you. Your husband, Mrs. Gleason, is in Straulau prison. You found him? I have not found him, no. I am telling you that is where he is. They are trying to force him to come out publicly on the side of communism. They have waited long for a rich, important American. They want him to make speeches to the workers in the Soviet zone.
But why? Why? Fräulein, Mrs. Gleason is most gracious and kind, but she is not completely aware.
Oh, well, at the moment, Mrs. Gleason, the party propaganda is stating that American workers are slaves. It would be a great triumph to have an American industrialist confirm this statement.
But Alex is an American citizen. Why can't we just march in with some soldiers?
Shh,
and...
Please, Mrs. Gleason, keep your voice down. Even my clocks have ears.
And it is much more difficult than that.
Then what? What do we do? Ah, I can get more money. I can cable London.
No.
And... Mr. Moto, the facts are these.
Yes.
He is in Straulau prison. A Russian named Manilov, who is a lieutenant in the Volkspolizei, is...
The
going...
what?
The Volkspolizei. They are the secret police.
Oh. Go on, Fräulein.
Manilov works at Straulau prison. He will try to arrange something for 100,000 marks.
And that was the beginning. For 3 long months, we planned. I sat up nights polishing my Russian until I spoke it like a native. I studied a floor plan of Straulau prison until I knew every corridor, every door, every cell by heart. Janet Gleason waited with a desperate patience born of her deep love for her husband. Emmy Brunner worked with a fanaticism born of suffering and hate. She anticipated every danger, foresaw every possibility. At last, we were ready. And at last, Manilov was able to arrange it. He came one night very late, to Emmy Brunner's clock shop.
Emmy, it is perfect. He is a different man.
Yes, Manilov, it is good.
I will pass as a Mongolian Russian?
Anywhere. The smooth-shaved head, the slanting eyes, it is perfect. And his face, Emmy, his face.
I injected paraffin under the cheekbones. Mr. Moto, I am sorry I had no ether, but it was impossible to obtain.
Pain, Fräulein, is to the Oriental... a state of mind.
Now, in a few weeks, the wax will melt and drain away. The contours of your face will go back to normal. Manilov,
yeah.
A last check. Let's go over it again.
Yeah. A card certifying he's a member of the Volkspolizei.
Good. And my identity card?
Yes. And a ration card.
Yes, sir.
I have bribed Gleason's regular guard. For 2 weeks, beginning tomorrow, he will pretend to be sick. You will take his place.
Yes.
And you understand that if you are caught... I will deny I ever saw you.
He knows that, Manilov.
Gleason is in the sub-basement, cell 40. When you report in to me, I will give you the keys. Even if I am alone, do not let on you know me. The whole thing is of the greatest danger.
I will use every discretion.
Ali Gleason may not be easy to convince.
Why not?
They keep 3 inches of water on the stone floor of his cell.
What?
For months now, he has been lying on a narrow wooden bunk. If he wishes to move, he must walk through the water. It is ice cold, and he is in bare feet.
Man's inhumanity to his brother.
As well as the impulse hypnosis. They have done other things.
You mean the pail?
Yes, 3 times a week.
The pail?
They put a large galvanized scrub pail over his head. Then they beat it with an iron bar. Oh, there is not a mark made on his body. But the noise of it crashes in his ears like the music of hell.
I must go now. It's dangerous for me to be in the American sector. You will report for work at the prison tomorrow night, Mr. Moto.
Yes, Manilov, and thank you.
Manilov, before you go, why were you so surprised when we told you Mrs. Gleason was in Berlin?
Because part of their torture of Ali Gleason was to tell him...
Tell him what?
Tell him his wife was dead.
I'll say anything you want. You leave me alone.
Mr. Gleason, please listen. I am a friend from outside. Do you understand? Mr. Gleason, your wife and I are trying to get you out of here.
I'll never get out. Go away.
I am pretending to be your attendant. I am really a Japanese-American. Your wife and I are in Berlin.
You're lying. They've got her, too.
No, Mr. Gleason.
They have. They told me.
Please believe me, Mr. Gleason.
She's dead. Janet is dead. Leave me alone.
Look. No, please. Please keep your eyes open. Look at this. It is the locket you gave your wife for her birthday last year. Look. Look at it, Mr. Gleason. Please.
It's a trick. They've killed her. They said she's dead.
Please, Mr. Gleason, believe me. I know I look like a Mongolian Russian. I am not. And your wife is all right. I swear she is.
Let me see the locket.
Yes, here.
Listen. Are you...
I promise. I give you my word. Your wife is alive. She is well and in Berlin.
Janet.
Shh, please. We are trying to get you out of here. Please be quiet. And give me back the locket.
No, it's mine. It's mine.
Shh. If they find it, everything will be ruined. Give it to me.
But I want it. It's mine.
Someone is coming.
It's him.
Who?
The doctor. They take me upstairs.
Give me the locket. Mr. Gleason, in the name of heaven, give me that locket. Now, trust me.
Our rebellious patient. And who are you?
The new guard, Doctor. The regular one is sick. Lieutenant Manilov assigned me to his place.
Your identity card?
Yes, Doctor. Here?
You know what to do?
Yes, Doctor.
Have him in the operating room in 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
No, I won't go. I won't go anymore.
You will do as you are told. Upstairs in 10 minutes.
What followed was a nightmare of horror. I took Alec Gleason upstairs to the first floor, where Dr. Staudenberg waited in a small, well-equipped operating room. Alec Gleason was strapped to a standard-type operating table, and two silver electrodes were fastened in place at his temples, another to his back at the base of his spine. Dr. Staudenberg flicked a switch, and the machine hummed evilly.
He must make a speech for us a week from Thursday. He's to tell the workers here the true state of affairs in America. The auto-hypnosis and suggestion must be complete.
Yes, Doctor.
Listen to me, Alec. Turn it on.
Yes, sir.
In American factories, the workers are chained to their jobs for 17 hours a day.
In American factories, the workers are chained to their jobs 17 hours a day.
Good, Alec. Excellent. Here, where the glorious Soviet culture flourishes like a flower, I have, for the first time in my life, seen true freedom.
Here, where the glorious Soviet culture flourishes like a flower, I have, for the first time in my life, seen true freedom.
Excellent. By a week from Thursday, he will publicly repudiate his American citizenship.
And then what, Mr. Moto?
They made him say incredible things. Electromagnetic hypnosis.
They'll kill him.
No, Mrs. Gleason, that is not their way.
When is he to make the speech?
There is a youth rally in the Congress Halle of the Berlin Zoo a week from Thursday, Fräulein Brunner.
I just can't stand this. It's so sick.
I promise you that a week from Thursday, you will have him back.
You are sure they don't suspect you?
Manilov has vouched for me. My papers are in order, and the makeup is flawless.
Is Manilov coming tonight?
Any minute now.
Yes, right?
Manilov is afraid. He is playing both ends against the middle. It is hard to be punctual when you sleep with the terror.
Here he is. Now. We can do it tonight. Gleason makes the speech.
A week from Thursday.
Yes. There will be you,
Alec Gleason and Dr. Staudenberg in the car.
Yes, yes.
You pass within three blocks of the border separating the British from the Soviet sector. How you do it is up to you. If you fumble, I will deny everything.
Of course.
Denied. Gleason is to speak. I will assign you to cut his hair and shaving.
Manilov, do they suspect anything?
No, no. Motus Russian is perfect to close the papers. But a single slip, and it is finished. They will empty the cell of water tomorrow. The breaking of his will is over. Only the hypnosis is to continue.
Your animals. All of your animals. I'd like to take every one of you and...
Listen, please.
Manilov, I am holding the money. 100,000 marks. Deliver him here on Thursday and you will be paid. Now, go quickly, Manilov. It is dangerous.
Fräulein.
Yes?
I must have a revolver.
Carrying a gun is dangerous.
On the night of the speech, being without one will be more dangerous. Mrs. Gleason.
Yes?
Somehow, before a week from Thursday, you must buy me some adrenaline and some caffeine. Otherwise, I am afraid your husband will be mentally and physically unable to cooperate with me at all. An American military doctor is the most likely source.
All right.
And also, a hypodermic needle.
I can get you that.
Then, all that remains for us to do between now and a week from Thursday is to pray that God will protect our efforts. There, Mr. Gleason, your hair is cut. You are shaved and dressed. How do you feel?
The workers in America are all victims.
Alec, listen to me. I am not going to hurt you. I am your friend.
What? What's that?
I have to give you an injection.
No, not another.
It's to help you. Help you. Adrenaline and caffeine.
Please, don't hurt me anymore.
I must have your cooperation and help. In just a few seconds, you will feel stronger. Your head clearer. Now, please, hold still, please. There. Now, don't say anything. Just listen. Your speech tonight is supposed to be of your own free will. There will be no guards. Just you, Dr. Staudenberg, and I. You are not supposed to be a prisoner.
Not a prisoner?
No. I will be driving. You will sit in the back with the doctor. I have here an iron bar.
No, don't. Please,
Alec,
don't.
Alec,
They put a pail over my head and they beat it with that.
No, Alec. Oh, it is so very, very important that you understand. I cannot manage it alone. I have to drive. Now, listen.
Yeah?
On our way to the Congress Hall, we have to pass through an alley that is three blocks from the British sector. When we get to that point... Alec, do you understand me?
I think so.
When we get to that point, I will honk the horn twice. Short honks. Can you hit Dr. Staudenberg with this iron bar?
Hit him?
You will be in the back seat with him. Hit him and shove him out of the car.
Out of the car?
Alec, it is very important that you help me. Remember, two honks of the horn. Hit him, shove him out of the back seat.
Back seat.
The doctor is coming. Oh, Alec, it is very, very dangerous. And you are sick, but you must try very, very hard. In less than an hour, you can be with your wife.
You're driving too fast. You'll make him nervous.
Yes, doctor.
You're all right, Alec?
Yes, I'm fine.
You seem much stronger. Your pupils are dilated almost as though... Alec! What are you... God! Help me!
Open the door, Alec. Open the door, quickly. Shove him out. Hurry, hurry, Alec.
I can't. Are you heavy? I can't. All right.
Just 100 yards, Alec.
They're soldiers.
Where?
Your left. They've seen us. Look out, they got right.
Down, Alec. Get down on the floor. Hang on. We're coming to the barrier.
Thank you.
doing there? They're 20 minutes late.
Sometimes there are delays.
What could go wrong?
Perhaps at the barrier there was something.
Oh, God, please, get him out, please.
Must we sit here and listen to those clocks? They drive you crazy.
They remind me, Mrs. Gleason, that time is running out. That every second we draw closer to the edge of the abyss. Yet still we cannot decide whether we want to win the last war or the next.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just not used to this. This horror. It's so fantastic.
Not to me. So when you go back, tell them in America. Tell them to get down on their knees every day of their lives and thank God for their country. Tell them what you've seen here.
Oh, Mr. Morto.
Mr. Morto.
We had an accident at the barrier. A rifle bullet exploded a tire.
I mean, he's dead.
No. Mrs. Gleason, he may not recognize you. The effect of the adrenaline has worn off. Please, try not to upset him. Come in, Alec.
Oh, Alec, what is it? Darling, it's me, Janet. You're all right now.
All right?
Don't you know me, darling? I'm Janet. I'm your wife.
Janet? My what?
Janet! You have just heard Mr. Moto, the world's greatest international secret agent, in The Victim. James Monk starred as Mr. Moto. The script was written and directed by Harry W. Junkin, produced by Carol Irwin. And now, with a preview of next week's story, Mr. I.A. Moto.
Thank you. Next week, the story of a man of God who held the devil for a playmate. Of an angel princess whose elegant, tapering hands held the secret of riddles undivined. The hitherto untold history behind the experiment known as Project 77. And now, may the sweet, soft mystery of night surround your slumber with the perfume of cedar and jasmine. And may the first breath of morning greet you with the fragrance of a thousand roses.
Enjoy the very best in radio. Be sure that you dial and write. Seems like the very best in radio. Morning, noon, and night is from this station. Morning, noon, and night, NBC.
Phil Baker invites you to join the $64 question next on NBC.
And this is where we leave the listeners from 1951 on NBC to listen to the $64 question. We, on the other hand, are going to have some comedy in the form of a Jack Benny show. And this is a pretty good one. This is from 1954. Paulie Goes to the Shrink.
The Jack Benny Program, transcribed and presented by Lucky Strike, the cigarette that's toasted to taste better.
If you want better weed from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. It's toasted to give you the best thing, yet it's the toasted
cigarette.
They get fine tobacco.
It's light tobacco.
It's mild tobacco too. And it's toasted.
Yes, it's toasted. Cause the toasting brings the flavor right through.
So to get the better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. It's toasted to give you the best bite. Yet it's the toasted
cigarette.
This is Don Wilson. As cigarette smokers, you and I know the most important single thing any cigarette can offer is taste. Better taste. And as many millions of Lucky smokers will tell you, Lucky's taste better. You know why? Because it's toasted. Yes, it's toasted to taste better. Lucky's better taste actually begins with the fine tobacco that goes into every Lucky Strike. LSMFT, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. and then that fine tobacco is toasted. It's toasted. That's the famous Lucky Strike process that tones up Lucky's naturally mild, good-tasting tobacco, brings it to its peak of flavor, makes it taste even better, cleaner, fresher, smoother. So for better taste in your cigarette, be happy, go Lucky. Buy a carton of better-tasting Lucky Strike. The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, every Saturday morning after rehearsal, the Jack Benny cast usually drops into the corner drugstore for a light lunch. As the scene opens, all of us, with the exception of Jack, have just entered the drugstore. Hey, we're lucky, fellas. It isn't crowded at all.
Yeah, we can have our regular table.
Well, let's sit down.
Hey, Jack wants to finish his business at the studio. He's standing on the corner on the other side of the street.
I wonder what the private business was he had to take care of.
Well, he went up to see Mr. Ackerman, the vice president of CBS. This is the day Jack is giving the network his ultimatum.
Oh, what ultimatum?
Either CBS gives him free parking or he's going back to NBC.
See, that'll never work.
Well, why not?
That's why he left NBC in the first place.
That's right.
Oh, here we are, Jack.
Okay. Sorry I took so long. What did you kids order?
Oh, nothing. We were waiting for you.
Oh, then I'll call the waitress. Oh, miss? Miss?
What do you want, Mac?
We'd like to order some food. Do you have a menu?
Yeah, here.
Thanks. Now, let me see. Hey, wait a minute. This is the menu from the Brown Derby.
I know. The stuff on ours would turn your stomach.
Say, look, miss, all I want is just an egg sandwich and a glass of milk.
I'll have the same. Okay.
Now, miss.
What do you want, cap on, boy?
Now, wait a minute, miss. Maybe I have to take those kind of insults when I'm on the radio, but I don't have to take them from you.
Gee, I'm sorry, Mac. I didn't know you were sensitive.
Well, I am. You don't have to presume I'm not sensitive just because I'm a big fat slob.
Don, control yourself.
All right. Now, miss, I'd like to order. All I want's a bowl of vegetable soup.
Okay.
Dennis, what do you have?
Well, let me see. Miss, do you have any vichyssoise?
No.
Well, do you have any escargot sauté en vin rose?
No.
Well, how about shish kebab and kreplach?
No.
Dennis, this is only a drugstore. Why are you ordering things like that?
I wanted to know I've been around.
Stop being silly. Order something you'd get in a drugstore.
Okay, I'll have a chicken sandwich.
With mayonnaise?
No, toothpaste.
Now, cut that out! Liz, just bring him a chicken sandwich, that's all. Now go get the food.
Okay, Mac. I'll be back in a flash with the trash.
Never mind. Just go get it. You know, it's hard to believe that she used to do the commercials on the Lady Esther program. Now, look, Dennis, when we do the show... Wait a minute, where did Dennis go?
I don't know.
Oh, there he is, over by the jukebox.
Here.
Well, why don't you play it, Dennis?
I can't. I haven't got a nickel.
Has anybody got a nickel?
Oh, I haven't.
Neither have I.
All I have is a dime.
Well, I can change it.
Jack, Benny, I...
All right. Here's the nickel, Dennis. Catch.
Vito mare quando è bello, spira quando senti mente, con il tuo chi tiene mente, cascetato sonar. Guarda qui su giardino, siente si stesciura range, nu profuma così fino, sinto core se ne va. Tu dici parta Dio, allontana la stucore della sera dell'amore, viene cuore non torna.
Sure was. Say, Dennis, will you look in the jukebox, see if there are any... Now, where did that kid go?
I don't know. He disappeared while his record was on.
Oh.
Say, Bob, I've been meaning to tell you how much I enjoy your CBS television show.
Oh, me too, Bob.
Yeah, same here. You know, Bob, I watch your shows every afternoon, and they're very good.
Well, thanks, Jack.
But I have a little suggestion, you know, just a little constructive criticism. I thought that if you got a comedy guest star occasionally, you'd get... you'd get more laughs on the program.
Yeah, but Jack, we don't go in for guest stars. Mine is sort of a homey show.
But Bob, homey show or not homey, I still think it's a big lift to have a guest star come in, particularly a comedian.
Well, maybe so, but gee, we don't have much money in the budget.
Well, how much can you pay for a guest star?
Well, about 15 bucks.
For 15 bucks, Jack can be homey.
I know a lot of recipes. Anyway, Bob, it's a very good show. And...
Hey, did the rest of you finish eating already?
Yes, Dennis, where were you?
Well, I thought as long as we were in a drugstore, I'd weigh myself.
Oh.
I weigh 140 pounds, stripped.
Stripped?
I took the weighing machine into the phone booth.
Look, Dennis.
And when I put in a penny, a little card came out.
Well, what did it say?
Put on your pants, kid. A lady wants to use the phone.
Dennis, stop. Stop already. Will you stop being silly?
Oh, he's not being silly, Jack. Sometimes those things just happen by coincidence.
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, that's the truth. Once I put a penny in a scale, and you ought to see the card that came out.
Well, what did it say?
Get off, you're hurting me.
Well, that I believe. That could happen.
I hate to break up this roundtable discussion, but will there be anything else?
Not for me. Anyone want anything?
Not me.
Well, I've had enough.
Okay, here's the check.
Oh, well, I'll take it, miss.
No, Bob. Let me pay it. It's my turn today.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Don. You paid last time. I'll pay today.
No. Bob paid last time. Now it's my turn.
No, Don, you're wrong. Dennis paid the last time, and now it's my turn.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, fellas. Let's all go Dutch.
Mary, it's their argument. Keep out. It doesn't concern you.
Hey, Blue Eyes, how come you never pay a check?
Did you take a pledge or something?
For your information, miss, it just so happens that the last time I picked up the check.
You had to. You were alone.
That has nothing to do with it.
Oh, miss, I'll pay it. Here, keep the change.
Thanks.
I got a car outside. Anybody want a lift?
Oh, not me. It's such a nice day. I'm going to walk.
Oh, say, Don, I've got to go over and see my brother about something. And say, you pass Bing's house on your way home, don't you?
Yeah, Bob.
Well, would you mind dropping me off at his gate?
Look, I'll drive you right up to his door.
No, no, just drop me at the gate. I'll take a bus the rest of the way.
Gee, he must have a big place.
Well, so long, Mary. So long, Jack.
Bye,
so long,
Bob.
So long.
See you at the show.
Yeah, so long, Don. See you later.
Gee, it's still early and the weather's so nice. I think I'll go out and play 9 holes of golf.
Mary, that's a wonderful idea, and I'll join you. Can you drive me by the house? I got to pick up my golf clubs.
Sure, my car's right in that parking lot.
Good. You get the car, meet me at the corner. I want to get a newspaper.
All right. See you in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Gee, that Bob Crosby's a nice guy. Imagine him giving the waitress the dollar tip. Gee, I'll bet it made her feel good. I got a thrill out of it, and I was only watching. Now, let's see. I want to get a paper. See, which paper do I want to get?
Hi, Rube.
Huh?
Oh, it's my friend from Calabasas.
Well, gosh, I haven't seen you in nearly a year. Well, tell me, what are you doing here in Los Angeles?
Huh? I came to get some supplies from a farm. I just bought an electric milking machine.
You need an electric milker for your cow?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to squeeze out a living by hand. Ain't that a humdinger?
Yeah.
Heard it on a homie show the other afternoon.
Could that have been Bob's? I don't know. Is that all you have on your farm, just cows?
Oh, no, no, no. Main crop is grapes. We operate our own winery.
Well, that sounds like a nice, pleasant occupation.
Pleasant, but dangerous, Rube. Dangerous. In fact, just a short time ago, my uncle fell into one of those big vats full of wine and drowned.
Your uncle drowned in wine?
Yep. Took the mortician 5 days to get the smile off his face.
Well, well, I can't understand how... Oh, I'm sorry. That car is honking for me. I gotta go now. Nice running into you. Goodbye.
So long, Rube.
So long, so long. Here I am, Mary.
Hiya, Rube.
Oh, stop. Come on, let's get going.
Gee, I'm glad we finished rehearsal early. Such a nice day for golf.
Yeah.
Say, Jack, what'd the headlines in the paper say?
How do you like that? I kept talking with that farmer. I forgot to buy a paper.
Well, turn on the radio and we'll hear the news.
All right.
And now for another news item. Professor Thaddeus Lambert of the University of Southern California has found a successful solution to the smog problem in Los Angeles. He has moved to Colorado. We continue our program with a musical interlude and bring you the Sportsman Quartet singing Oh.
Mary, that's our quartet.
Yeah.
Oh, lady, oh, how she can snuggle, she's as sweet as can be. And when we're in the parlor, oh, the way she whispers pretty nothings to me. All I can do is holler, oh, it isn't what she does, but oh, the clever way she does it, especially when she meets beneath the moon above. Sweet cookie, oh, what'll I do? The way she sends me with her go-get-em eyes and puts me in a flurry, oh, doo-doo-doo-doo, the way I fall for all her beautiful lies. Believe me, I should worry, oh, 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 the way she beats me daffy, oh, I think she'll drive me daffy, oh, 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 oh.
how my super sentimental, wonderful sweetie can love. Oh, lady, oh, doo-doo-doo-doo, the way she holds a lucky strike in her hand, it makes me very happy, oh, doo-doo-doo-doo, for deep the smoke and pleasure, luckies are grand, just ask your dear old pappy, oh, such fine and light tobacco, oh, there's 20 in a pack, so lady, when I see you light a lucky, I know, together we'll be saying, oh, a lucky has a better taste, it is true. I like to sing about them all. A cleaner, fresher smoke is smoother for you. I'll never be without them all. The only smoke for me is all. And LSMT and oh, 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 oh. I'm so wild about a lucky. All I can say is just oh. All I can say is just oh.
Jack, run in and get your clubs.
Want to come in the house for a minute, Mary?
No, I'll wait out here in the car.
Okay. Show you my etchings. Won't take me long.
Is that you, Mr. Benny?
Yes, Rochester.
Would you like me to fix you some lunch?
No, thanks. I just... Wait a minute, Rochester. What are you doing with my violin?
I'm going to put it back in the case. That violin's been lying around ever since you went off the air last June.
That long?
Uh-huh. In fact, it's got mold all over it.
Well, did you wipe it off?
No, sir.
Why not?
Boss, mold makes penicillin, and that thing needs all the help it can get.
Never mind. And clean it up good, because I'm going to play my violin on my television show next Sunday.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, look, I'm going out to play some golf with Miss Livingston.
Oh, your clubs are in the closet.
I know. And, Rochester, at 5 o'clock, I want you to drive out to the clubhouse and bring me home.
I can't, Mr. Billy. The mechanics are working on your Maxwell down at the garage.
Why, what's wrong with my car?
Nothing. It's just time for its million-mile checkup.
All right, all right. I'll have Miss Livingston drive me home. Now, Rochester, don't bother about dinner tonight because I'm going out.
Okay. But, boss.
Yeah?
Well, it's none of my business, but I think you ought to stay home tonight with Polly.
With the parrot?
Yeah, she's been acting awfully funny lately. She's so moody.
Oh, I think you're imagining it, Rochester. Parrots don't get moody.
Well, Polly is, and she's doing the strangest things.
What do you mean?
Remember that coconut you bought her?
Yeah, did she eat it?
Eat it? She's trying to hatch it.
Well, maybe I better go in and take a look at her. Hello, Polly. She won't look at me. Polly, it's me, Daddy. Now, Polly, stop sitting on that coconut. I wonder what's wrong with her. Imagine her trying to hatch... Say, Rochester, that's it. The poor thing's all alone. So she... I know she doesn't know any better. I think I'll buy a mate for her.
Buy a mate.
Uh-oh, Mr. Benny. Remember the last time you bought her a mate? You had those two parrots in the same cage for over a year, and then you discovered they were both females.
Yeah. I wonder how that happened.
Somebody goofed.
Well, don't look at me as though I'm stupid, Polly. You didn't know yourself for nearly a year. Gee, Rochester, now you've got me kind of worried.
For heaven's sake, Jack, what's taking you so long?
I'm sorry, Mary, but Polly isn't feeling well.
Oh, that's too bad.
The poor thing. What's wrong with her?
Miss Livingston, she just sits around her cage all day brooding. It's been going on for weeks now.
Oh, Jack, you ought to do something. Why don't you take her to a psychiatrist?
A psychiatrist? Mary, this is no time for joking.
I'm not joking. They have psychiatrists for animals. I know one right near here.
All right. I'll get Polly and we'll go.
Jack, here's the doctor's office. You go with Polly and I'll wait outside in the car.
Okay.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
Well, are you the psychiatrist?
Yes, sir. I am Dr. Hugo Browner, Ph.D.
Ph.D.?
Parrots, horses, and dogs. Those are my specialties, but I take care of all animals.
Oh, well, I've come to see you about my parrot here. I think she has some sort of a complex.
What seems to be wrong with the little lady?
Well, she's very melancholy lately, and today I gave her a coconut, and she tried a hatchet. Could it be possible that birds long for motherhood?
Oh, certainly. Tell me, how long has she been acting so moody?
For a few weeks. Before that, she was always jolly. She used to love to listen to the radio and television. You know?
A parrot that enjoyed radio and television? This I cannot believe.
Pepper mate, furnish mate, proof.
I believe. Now, to help her, maybe it would be good if you told me something about yourself. What do you do?
Well, I'm Jack Benny.
Oh, yes, you look familiar. Well, in addition to yourself, Mr. Benny, how many people come in contact with this parrot?
Well, there's my valet and my cast and my six riders.
Uh-huh. And what is this parrot's name?
Polly.
It took six riders to think of that?
Look, doctor.
Never mind. Now, tell me, how old is this parrot?
Well, let me figure it out. See, the man in the pet shop where I bought her said she was born in 1894. That would make her...
39.
Where does she get such delusions?
I'm sure I don't know.
Now, Mr. Benny, you say this parrot listens to radio. Does she like music?
Oh, she loves music.
Good, good. I will give her a word association test.
Word association about music?
Yes. I will give her a word, and by automatic reflex, she will say the first thing that comes into her mind.
Oh, good, good.
Now, Polly, listen. Piano.
Liberace.
Clarinet.
Pretty good one.
Violin.
Penicillin.
That I do not understand at all.
It must have been something she heard, you know?
Obviously. Now, to continue the word test. Listen, Polly. Father. Mother. Baby.
Climb upon my knees, silly boy. You are only three, silly boy. You know where you're going.
You all right? Oh, you for a baby.
That's what I thought.
Me, silly boy.
Polly, be quiet. Doctor, doctor, I'll go to the... Polly, please. I'll go to the pet shop and get an egg. Polly, control yourself. Stop crying. Polly, we'll go right to the pet shop. We know now. Motherhood. Polly. Polly, I'll get your name.
You're dead from heaven.
No, Polly, I'll get your name. Let's go. Polly.
Polly.
Jack will be back in just a minute. But first, the sweetheart of Lucky Strike, Dorothy Collins.
If you want better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. It's toasted to give you the best taste yet. It's the toasted cigarette. They take fine tobacco. It's light tobacco. It's mild tobacco, too. And it's toasted. Yes, it's toasted.
because the toasting brings the flavor right through. So to get better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. It's toasted to give you the best taste yet. It's the toasted cigarette.
That's something to remember, friends. If you want better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. Yes, because it's toasted to taste better. Now, first of all, Lucky's taste better because they're made of fine tobacco. L-S-M-F-T, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Naturally mild, good-tasting tobacco. And then that tobacco is toasted. It's toasted. The famous Lucky Strike process tones up Lucky's naturally mild, good-tasting tobacco to make it taste even better, cleaner, fresher, smoother. Keep that in mind. And for a better-tasting smoke every time, make your cigarette Lucky Strike.
If you want better taste from your cigarette, Lucky Strike is the brand to get. It's toasted to give you the best taste yet. It's the toasted cigarette.
Jack, what does the psychiatrist say about Polly?
Oh, she'll be all right. All birds get moody once in a while.
Ah, it's a shame we missed our golf game, but maybe we can play next week.
No, Mary, I'm going to be busy all week rehearsing for my television show next Sunday.
Gosh, Jack, are you going to be on television that often?
Mary, read that line the way we rehearsed it.
Gosh, Jack, are you going to be on television that often?
That's better. Good night.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks. The Jack Benny program is brought to you by Lucky Strike, product of the American Tobacco Company, America's leading manufacturer of cigarettes.
It's time to go, but keep your device tuned to this spot on the internet for more next week when we return with great old-time radio here on the RTC Podcast. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.